Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host to welcome you through the creaking door. Well, been shopping around for a nice case of murder? Of course you have. And you've come to the right place because the characters on this program simply kill themselves to keep you amused. Why, only the other day we were accused of making murder our business. But we wouldn't do that, friends. Oh, no. Because that would be mixing business with pleasure. And we consider it a pleasure to give some stiff the business. And now, friends, tonight's story is a triangle tale concerning a man, a woman, and a murderer. You've heard it said that those who laugh last laugh best. But we're going to prove that it never pays to get into a laughing contest with a ghost, because the ghost always gets the last laugh. Oh yes, the dead laugh.
I know he's dead. His body's been in the grave for weeks. And yet, although I tell myself it's impossible, I can hear him laugh. That raucous, mocking sound haunts me. Same laugh that I heard for the first time in the courtroom. He'd never laughed at all during the weeks of the trial, never even smiled. But this day, when he came before me for sentencing, John Spencer, you have been found guilty of murder in the first degree. Do you wish to make a statement before a sentence is imposed?
I killed Hicks. I'm willing to admit it now. But he was no good. He got just what he deserved. And everyone knows it. I'm not a killer. I never committed a crime before. And all I ask now is a chance.
John Spencer, the jury, took all that into consideration when it recommended life imprisonment. However, I have the power to ignore that recommendation. It is my firm conviction that to allow one man to take the law into his own hands is to encourage others to do likewise. I therefore override the recommendation of the jury and sentence you to be hung by the neck until dead.
No! Judge, please! I've got a girl. We were going to be married. All I ask is to live so I can see her occasionally.
You should have thought of that before you committed murder.
It's easy for you to tell me what I should have done. But you won't always be on top. Maybe someday you'll be down here where I am. When that happens, I hope they throw the book at you. Just like you're doing to me.
Bailiff, remove the prisoner.
Won't I be laughing when that happens? Wherever I am, I'll be laughing fit to bust.
Same old story. Prisoner pleads innocence or guilt with good cause, asks mercy. When clemency is refused, condemned man curses judge and hopes the judge will someday find himself in a similar plight. Spencer's outburst failed to move me in the slightest. I had heard it many times before. I went home to forget about the Spencer case.
Richard? Is that you, Richard?
Yes, dear. I'll come in as soon as I've freshened up.
Come right now. I've been waiting here all day. Surely it's not too much to ask.
All right, Laura. I'm coming.
Richard, I want you to meet my new nurse, Margaret Cummings.
This is
Judge Thornton, Miss Cummings.
How do you do?
Miss Cummings? Haven't we met before?
That's hardly likely. It's probably my face. It's so ordinary.
On the contrary, Miss Cummings, I should say your face is rather unusual.
Richard, Suppose you stop that silly chatter about faces and talk to Miss Cummings about her duties.
Very well. Come into my study, Miss Cummings. We can talk better there. Sit down, please. There's not much to say, really. In the first place, my wife's heart condition isn't really dangerous.
Yes, I gathered that from Dr. Fletcher.
Oh, he told you about my wife, eh?
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, you're a professional person, nurse, and I believe in frankness. It makes things easier. My wife is 11 years my senior, getting on past middle age. She's a bit worried. Not that I give her any grounds for it. Jealous. You understand?
Perfectly.
She's not an easy person to get along with. You'll have to humor her.
I'll do my best.
And Miss Cummings?
Yes?
I was just wondering where it was that I saw you before. It escapes me. You know, Miss Cummings, your face is rather haunting. That was how it began. We played a game during those first few weeks. I would ask, Miss Cummings, where was it that I first saw you?
Don't you remember yet?
No, I don't.
Well, I do. And someday, if you're nice, I'll tell you.
Well, we would laugh together. Having that girl in the house made me feel young again. It didn't last. It ended one evening in Laura's room.
Richard?
Yes, dear?
Put down that newspaper. I want to talk to you.
I'm listening.
Don't you think you're going a bit too far, Richard?
Too far? What do you mean?
I mean Miss Cummings.
Oh.
I won't stand for it. I won't allow you to disgrace me in my own home with a woman who's little more than a servant.
Oh, Laura, for heaven's sake.
I may be a bedridden invalid, but there is a limit.
You're jumping to ridiculous conclusions, Laura.
Ridiculous, am I? I suppose you'll deny that you're in love with Miss Cummings and that you've been carrying on with her right under my nose.
Certainly. I'll deny it.
I've got eyes, Richard. I've seen you two whispering together. I've watched how you look at her.
Oh, you're talking utter nonsense. There's nothing between me and Miss Cummings.
Nothing?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Well, then, I give you a chance to prove what you say. I don't want Miss Cummings here. Dismiss her.
You want me to dismiss her?
Yes, Richard, I do.
Miss Cummings, this is going to be rather unpleasant. You see, my wife,
she... Yes, I know. She wants me to leave.
Yes? How did you know?
I couldn't help overhearing the conversation.
Well, then you also know why she wants you to leave.
Yes, but you warned me when I first came here that she was jealous.
It's been very pleasant having you here.
Thank you.
I'm going to miss you. Miss Cummings, could I have your home address?
Of course. Why do you want it?
Oh, I hope you won't think me presumptuous, but, well, perhaps we might be able to see each other.
Would that be wise?
No, it wouldn't be wise, but I might as well face it. I couldn't hide it from Laura, and I can't hide it from myself. I love you, Miss Cummings. That night, I heard Spencer's laugh for the first time since that day in the courtroom. I set it down as a figment of the imagination, born out of a feeling of guilt due to my disloyalty to Laura. I put it out of my mind. I had other things to think about. The slip of paper with Margaret Cummings' address, it was in my pocket. A dozen times during the next week, I picked up the telephone to call her. But something held me back. It was fear, I guess. Fear that if I saw her again, I would be taking a final irrevocable step. Then I couldn't stand it any longer. Without seeing her, I dialed her number.
Hello?
Is that you, Margaret?
Yes, who is this?
This is Richard.
Richard?
Judge Thornton.
Oh, hello, how are you? It's been so long, I thought you'd forgotten me.
Oh, there's little chance of that. Could I see you tonight, Margaret?
Why, yes, of course. Come over as soon as you'd like.
I dressed carefully. Examining myself in the mirror, I saw a tall man, still on the right side of 50, still trim in figure and distinguished in appearance. When I got to Margaret's apartment, my heart was beating fast, like a boy on his first date. Somehow, I don't know quite how it happened, she was in my arms. I was kissing her.
Oh, Richard.
My darling.
Oh, no. We're being foolish.
Sit down, darling. Here, beside me.
Like this?
Oh, that's perfect, Margaret. Would you marry me?
Marry? You can't be serious.
I was never more earnest in my life.
Aren't you forgetting a little detail?
No, I'm not forgetting about Laura. She has a weak heart. She may die. And if she dies...
I wouldn't count on it. Your wife takes very good care of herself. She may live to be 100.
But if she should die, would you marry me?
I don't know. It's not fair to ask me now. Not while your wife is still alive. Ask me later.
Oh, Richard, did you have a pleasant evening at the club?
I didn't go to the club, Laura.
No?
No. I lied to you. I spent the evening with Margaret Cummings.
Richard!
You were right. I'm in love with her. I never knew what love meant before. I can't live without her.
You're mad. You don't know what you're saying.
I want a divorce, Laura.
Divorce?
I want
no!
it immediately.
No, you can't do this to me. Oh, my heart.
What?
Now see what you've done.
Laura.
Oh, the shock. My pills, Richard. Give them to me. Hurry. Hurry, Richard.
I knew she was pretending the heart attack, hoping to play on my sympathy. That was Laura's favorite trick. It always worked before. Not this time. This time I would pretend until I was ready to act. I gave her the pills, watched her take them, and sink back onto the pillow.
Oh, thank you, Richard.
Feel better now?
Oh, yes, yes, much better, dear. I don't know what I would have done without you here. I would have died. Oh, Richard, say you didn't mean what you said before. Don't you see? I couldn't go on living without you.
You won't have to, Laura.
Then you won't leave me for that girl?
I'll take care of you. Here, let me make you more comfortable. Your pillow needs rearranging.
Yes, it does. Richard, what are you doing?
I'm fixing the pillow. Lie still, stop twisting around. This isn't much different than a heart attack. Laura, she's dead.
Hello?
Dr. Fletcher.
Yes?
This is Judge Thornton. Please come quickly, doctor. My wife, she's had a heart attack.
So it happened during an argument?
It was nothing important, doctor. Just a domestic quarrel, and suddenly she had the attack, and I gave her the pills, but by that time it was too late.
That's too bad.
If I'd only known that her condition had become so dangerous.
Well, Judge, you have nothing to reproach yourself for. These things happen.
Will you take care of the formalities, doctor?
Oh, yes, of course.
The death certificate?
I'll list the cause as failure of the heart.
There was no need to act the part of the stricken husband after Dr. Fletcher left. I stood looking down at Laura's body. She was dead. And Dr. Fletcher's certificate would clear me of any suspicion of murder. I was free. Free to marry Margaret. I walked to Margaret's apartment that night. The street was dark, empty. I had the uncomfortable feeling that I was being watched, followed. Then I heard footsteps behind me. I hurried my pace. The man behind me did likewise. Frightened as I was, I decided to stop and confront the follower. He came toward me, his face and figure shadowy in the dark. "What do you want? Why are you following me?"
"You ought to know, Judge Thornton."
"Who are you? Come closer so I can..." "Spencer! John Spencer! It can't be! You're dead!"
"Dead, am I? Well, you ought to know, Judge."
"Now take it easy, mister. Take it easy. Just tell me what happened."
"I was being followed, officer, so I turned around to see who it was."
"And did you see who it was?"
"Yes, and that's why I fainted. The man following me was a dead man."
"He was a... What's that?"
"The man following me is dead. I know he's dead, officer."
"I ought to run you in. You're crazy."
I had intended to tell Margaret that Laura was dead. I meant to ask her to marry me. But the encounter on the street drove those thoughts far out of my mind. Arriving at her apartment, I went directly to the window and I looked out. And there, across the street, leaning against the wall, I saw John Spencer.
"Richard, I'm insulted."
"What?"
"You didn't kiss me. You haven't even said hello."
"Oh, I'm sorry, dear. That man across the street, he can't be real. And yet, if he isn't..."
"What man, Richard?"
"Don't you see him?"
"No, there's no one across the street."
"He was there a moment ago. I turned my head to talk to you, and now he's gone."
"Darling, you're trembling. You must be sick."
"Don't look at me like that."
"Richard, what's the matter?"
"Oh, I guess I am sick. I better go have a talk with Dr. Fletcher."
"Yes, I remember the Spencer case very well, Judge Thornton. You could have spared Spencer's life, but didn't. And now you imagine that he follows you?"
"Yes."
"But the man is dead."
"Then it was his ghost that followed me. His ghost I spoke to. His ghost that laughs."
"There are no ghosts, Judge Thornton. With one exception. The ghosts we carry about inside us."
"What do you mean?"
"Well, these things you hear and see, these are hallucinations brought on by feelings of guilt. Spencer's been dead for weeks. So, the question is, why should you experience guilt feelings at this late date?"
"I don't know."
"Well, psychiatry has an explanation. Quite often in such cases, one refuses to face the guilt object and transfers his guilt feelings to some other person."
"What are you driving at?"
"I'm suggesting that your guilt feelings are not caused by the Spencer incident. And I'm going to ask you a blunt question. Did you murder your wife?"
"Why, of all the idiotic,
now,
stupid things..."
"Just
to
a moment, Judge. Just a moment. I've been rather uneasy about the circumstances of Mrs. Thornton's death."
"But you yourself diagnosed it as a heart attack."
"I accepted what you told me that night. A superficial examination of the body did indicate such a conclusion, yes. But your wife's cardiac condition was mild. Now your guilt feelings lead me
this
to suspect..."
"This murder talk is ridiculous. Were there any signs of struggle, any marks of violence?" "Of course not."
"Mrs. Thornton might have been suffocated."
"Oh, nonsense."
"Perhaps. At any rate, I intend to recommend to the coroner that an autopsy be performed."
"An autopsy?"
"Yes, it would determine whether death was due to suffocation. You should have no objection, if I am mistaken."
"You meddling fool!"
"Judge Thornton, put down that paperweight!"
"You're so clever!"
"Stay away from me! Oh! Oh!"
"I've gone too far now to stop at another murder. I'd lost my head. I should have agreed to the autopsy. That would have given me a day or two in which to plan my escape. But now, as things were, it would only be a matter of hours before Fletcher's body was discovered. My thoughts twisted, turned in panic.
Maybe someday you'll be down here where I am. Won't I be laughing when that happens? Wherever I am, I'll be laughing fit to bust.
I ran like a frightened child. I needed help, and there was no one to turn to. Margaret, she loved me. She'd help me. I went to Margaret and I told her what happened.
You killed your wife?
For you, so we could be married.
And then Dr. Fletcher?
I had to kill him, Margaret. He was going to recommend an autopsy.
Why did you come here?
We've got to run away. We still have an hour or two. We could charter a plane to Canada or Mexico.
What makes you think I'd run away with you?
I thought you loved me.
Don't be stupid. I'm going to turn you over to the police.
Margaret, you can't mean that.
Can't I? Just watch me.
Margaret, listen. Before you pick up that phone, even if you don't love me, even if you won't go away with me, give me a chance. Have mercy.
You make me laugh. Judge Thornton, who never gave anybody else a break, pleading for mercy. Well, turn around and ask the man behind you for mercy.
Behind me?
That's right.
Spencer. John Spencer.
Take another look, Judge.
No, you're not John Spencer. There's a resemblance, but you're not John Spencer.
I'm his brother.
You're the man that was following me.
That's right.
I was tricked, led on by Margaret to kill my wife, and forced by you to betray myself to Dr. Fletcher. Why? Why, Margaret? Why did you do this?
For revenge.
Revenge?
Yes. The first day I came to your house, you thought my face was familiar. Well, now I'll tell you where it was that you first saw me. It was in the courtroom at John Spencer's trial.
Courtroom? Yes. Yes.
Yes. Remember how he begged for mercy? He told you he had a girl, that he was engaged to be married, and you could have given him his life, but you sentenced him to his death.
Whoa, were you that girl?
Yes.
Spencer, did he know about this?
All this was his plan, his revenge. Hello, operator. Give me police headquarters. I want to report two murders. Yes, that's right. Two murders. Tell them it's very important to get here as soon as they can.
I'm waiting now for the police to come. For the trial. For the sentence, which I know will be death. As I wait, my thoughts go back to the courtroom.
You won't always be on top. Maybe someday you'll be down here where I am. And when that happens, I'll be laughing.
Well, Judge Thornton certainly misjudged Margaret Cummins, which was a grave mistake. Why, he didn't have the ghost of a chance with her. She double-crossed him right into the graveyard. Oh, a word of caution. If you must commit a murder, be sure to select the proper weapon. I suggest a sharp-edged axe, because it provides you with a handy alibi. When the police want to know why you did it, you can claim the killing was accidental. Good night. Good evening, friends. This is your host to welcome you through the creaking door into the inner sanctum. Come in, won't you? I'd like you to meet some new guests we just dug up. Now, that peculiar cadaver standing off in the corner by himself has a serious case of claustrophobia. Poor stiff. He just can't stand shrouds. Now, this fellow to your right was a mountain climber in life. He took his wife out on an alpine hike, and while they were going up an icy slope, he cut the rope that held them together. Said he just couldn't stand to be tied to one woman. And now meet our most forgettable character, Wild-Eyed Willie. One day, Willie's ugly wife bit him. So, in anger, he buried her in the backyard. 6 months later, his homely mate came up as a dogwood tree to haunt him. Now, according to Willie, her bark is much worse than her bite. Now, please, friends, absolute silence. We want it so quiet, we can hear a head drop. In a small hillside New England cemetery, a chill evening wind stirs the leafless trees with a complaining murmur. A blood-red moon probes through the branches with grotesque fingers, touching the faded headstones with their eerie light. A frail, drawn-faced young woman sits on an old stone bench, listening acutely to the rustling of the branches, as if to capture some weird whisper of the dead's forgotten past. Perhaps a vengeful corpse.
Sarah, where are you?
Oh, Paul, I'm here, over here.
Sarah, I've been looking all over for you. What are you doing out here anyway?
I was called out here, Paul.
What?
The wind. There was a voice on the wind, and it called me to come out here.
That's just in your mind, darling. No voice called you.
Yes, Paul, it did. I recognized the voice.
You recognized it? Then whose voice was it?
It was old and tired and sort of cracked. And yet, I could recognize it as my own voice.
You heard your own voice?
Yes, Paul. And it was strongest right here where I'm sitting now, among my family's graves.
Hello there!
It's just Mr. Griffin, the caretaker. I asked him to help me look for you.
Oh, well, I see you found your wife all right, Mr. Seaton.
Yes, I found her all right, Mr. Griffin.
I thought I saw Mrs. Seaton come up to the graveyard here earlier. Didn't expect she'd still be around. Thought she'd already left. Oh, boy.
What's wrong?
Oh, it's just that I thought...
What's the matter, Mr. Griffin?
It's just that I get a sort of funny feeling every time I pass this grave here.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
That grave. One right there. The one right next to you.
Why? What's the matter with it?
Well, ain't you noticed? There's only one name on the headstone. The first name. Hester.
That's strange. My family name is Randall. Wasn't this woman a Randall?
You don't know the story.
No. What story are you talking about?
Well, the kin who buried this Hester woman didn't think she deserved the family name, so they left it off the headstone.
But why? Why didn't they give Hester her full name?
Because they didn't want anybody to know who she was, I guess. You see, Hester was burned at the stake. for witchcraft.
Witchcraft?
Yep, that's what they say.
Mr. Griffin, my wife is an ill woman as it is. I'm not sure of that story.
Let him go on, Paul.
No, but Sarah, you don't understand.
What else, Mr. Griffin?
Well, Mrs. Seaton. Except Esther claimed at the stake that they were burning an innocent woman. She could be heard shouting it as the flames licked around her. She threatened with her last breath to get even someday.
How could she get even?
Don't know. But according to the story I heard, Esther said that this here town owed her the years of her life that they took away.
Well, now, this is completely ridiculous. It's only a legend.
Mr. Griffin, tell me, how many years ago did all this happen?
Well, it's right here on the headstone, you see. Esther, a lost soul, born October 13th, 1759. Died. Good heavens.
What's wrong?
Look, Mrs. Seaton, the date of Esther's death. It's worn away.
Sarah.
Yes, Paul.
What are you doing out of bed? When did you get up?
Why, just a minute ago. I can't sleep. She keeps calling me. I hear her voice right here in this room. Just a few minutes ago.
What?
She was begging me to help her, telling me she never really lived and pleading with me to bring her back to life.
Now, Sarah, you've got to settle down.
I thought I saw her.
Now, Sarah, believe me, there's no one here.
She was dressed in a black dress, and there was a large W on it. That's for witch. And in her hand, she held a flaming torch.
I'm going to call the doctor.
Someone's at the door.
All right, I'll see who it is.
No, wait. Wait. I'll go.
Ah, good evening, Mrs. Seaton.
Why, Judge Foster.
I hope I didn't awaken you folks. I saw a light in the window, so I decided I'd better come see.
That's all right, Judge. Come right in.
Ah, thank you. I'm sorry to bother you this time of the night, Mr. Seaton, but I was looking out my window on the other side of the cemetery, and I thought I saw something or someone prowling around out there. And I wondered if they came over this way.
Who was it?
Well, I don't know. Someone carrying a torch.
A torch?
Go on, Judge.
Well, of course, it could be that my eyes were playing tricks on me. My eyes, they're not so good anymore. But as far as I could make out, it was a woman dressed in black.
Paul!
You saw this woman, Judge? You're sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw her. Of course, it's kind of dark out there, but it looked to me like there was something on the front of her dress.
What do you mean?
Well, there was the letter W, a big white letter W on it.
Hester. It was Hester, just as I...
No. No, Sarah.
Hester? Who's Hester?
Hester Randall. That's who you saw. She was in this house.
No, it must be a trick. You see, someone is trying to frighten you, to make you worse.
Now, hold on, folks. Hester Randall was buried over 100 years ago.
She's come back to life!
Mrs. Seaton, I don't think
now,
that...
Now, Judge, my wife is ill. She doesn't realize what she's saying. She's upset and... Well...
I know Hester's alive! You didn't believe me, Paul, but Judge Foster saw her too.
Well, I didn't see anyone who's been dead 100 years...
What is it, Judge?
Don't you smell it?
Yes.
Something's burning.
It smells like burning flesh. Look, out there on the back lawn, stuck in the earth, a torch, a flaming torch. Sarah, I tell you, it's useless to have me dig up this grave.
I've got to know, Paul. It's the only way I'll be sure.
Careful, Mr. Seaton. You're just about deep enough for the coffin now. If it's still there.
Judge, I don't know how you can sanction a thing like this.
Well, Mr. Seaton, you see, I want to be sure, too.
But it's ridiculous.
Ah, you've struck wood with the shovel. Yes, it's the coffin, all right. You'd better go easy now. That wood is soft with age and half rotted away.
Okay, I think we can open it now.
Wait, I'll give you a hand with the lid.
something inside it.
A body. It's a body, and it's all charred.
It's a body, all right. Only it isn't a woman's. You can still make out the face. Ugh, it's Griffin, the caretaker.
Dr. Norton, I am so glad you've gotten here.
I came as soon as I could, Mr. Seaton. What's wrong?
She's worse, Doctor.
Oh?
Much worse. She's been in her room all day, hiding like a frightened child. I think the reading made it worse.
Reading? What reading?
Well, for the past few days, she's been reading books about her family history.
Why did you let her have them?
Well, because at first they seemed to quiet her. Since the night we found Mr. Griffin's body in that grave, she's wanted to know more and more about Hester Randall.
Paul?
Sarah, Dr. Norton's here, dear.
You've got to warn him, Paul, before it's too late.
Warn whom, Miss Eaton?
Judge Foster. He's in danger. Hester will kill him next.
What?
It's in the records of the court. The magistrate who sentenced Hester to death in this state was a man named Foster.
Now, Miss Seaton, you're just upset.
Please, believe me. Judge Foster is a direct descendant of that magistrate.
Sarah, Hester's dead, dear. The dead can do no harm.
Paul, you don't understand. She's killed one man already, and now she's going to kill another. She swore she'd get that revenge on the magistrate and on the man who was her accuser.
Miss Seaton, all this took place over 100 years ago.
Then what about Mr. Griffin?
What do you mean, Sarah?
He had the same last name, too. According to the record, Hester's accuser was a man named Richard Griffin.
Judge Foster, my wife insisted that I come over here and warn you about Hester.
Well, thank you, Mr. Seaton, for troubling, but I'm not a bit worried about the similarity of names.
Well, I didn't admit it to Sarah, but the coincidence with Griffin was strange.
Oh, the dead never frightened me, Mr. Seaton, but thank you for coming over. Oh, by the way, can I drive you home?
No, thanks. Dr. Norton is waiting for me outside.
Good night.
Good night, Mr. Seaton. Now, where did I put those glasses of mine? I'm sure I left them here on the table. Say, who opened that door? Is that you come back, Mr. Seaton? Well, confound it, whoever it is, answer me. Who's out there?
It's me, you prosperous just duke.
What? Who are you?
Your conscience has been dimmed by the evil of your acts. Who am I? Mark you well this torch I light. Now mark you also my garb. This black garment I wear, and upon which you have impressed the wicked letter W.
Hester!
Aye, Satan's magistrate, Hester Randall.
That Hester character. You know, that's the way a dame gets when she's burned up. Makes a specter of herself. You know, I kind of feel sorry for old Judge Foster. When Hester showed up, the poor guy didn't know which way to turn. They should have believed Sarah Seaton. She sure had Hester dead, rather alive to rights. Yes, indeed. It's a wise descendant who knows her own forebears, particularly the grave-minded one. Well, now, let's get back to our flaming fable and see what's cooking.
Paul, wake up. Oh, please wake up.
Sarah, what's the matter, darling?
I've just had a terrible dream. I'm afraid.
Oh, now, easy, dear.
I dreamt that Judge Foster was killed tonight by Hester. You did warn Judge Foster, didn't you, Paul?
Yes, yes, of course, Sarah. Where are you going, dear?
I'm getting dressed. I'm going down to tell the judge myself.
You're staying here.
Paul, please, let me go. It means a man's life.
You heard what Dr. Norton said. Under no circumstances are you to leave the house. You're to talk to no one.
Why am I being kept here like a prisoner? Why don't you let me speak to anyone? What was that?
Sounded like a door banging in the wind. Yes, there it was again.
Didn't you lock that back door?
I'm sure I did. I'd better see what happened.
Wait, I'm going with you. I'd better turn on a light here in the kitchen.
No, you won't have to. I can see. Oh, it's the door, all right. I guess I must have forgotten to spring the latch.
Paul!
Sarah, what's the matter?
Out there, by the trees at the end of the lawn. I thought I saw a figure.
All right, just stay here, dear. I'll be right back. There's no one out here, Sarah.
You're sure?
Positive. Probably just a shadow.
Oh! There is someone! Right there!
Sarah! Sarah, what happened? Sarah! Where are you? Sarah! She was standing here, Sheriff. Right here at the back door when I heard her scream.
And there wasn't a sign of her when you got back here to the door?
Not a sign of her.
Well, folks don't just vanish into thin air, Mr. Seaton. She must be around here someplace.
I've got to find her before it's too late.
Too late? What do you mean by that?
I don't know, really. I have a feeling something really bad must have...
Oh, now you're going to tell me about dead witches returning too, are you? Don't tell me you believe in that stuff.
I don't know what to believe.
Sheriff, is that you, Sheriff?
Yeah? Who's there?
Dr. Norton. You better come with me, Sheriff. I just discovered something on the other side of the road about a mile away. Oh, Mr. Seaton, I think you better wait here.
What is it, Dr. Norton? What have you found?
I'd rather you wait, as I said before, until we're sure.
What are you trying to hide from me?
I guess you'd better speak up, Doctor. If it's something that concerns Mr. Seaton, maybe he should know.
All right, Sheriff. When I made the turn into the road, my headlights caught it in a ditch. I wasn't sure at first, so I stopped the car and got out. It was a body in the ditch, a charred body. This way, Sheriff. Over here, to the right.
Where is she?
Easy now, Mr. Seaton.
Right here, Sheriff.
Wait until I switch on the flashlight. There.
Is it Sarah?
Just a moment, Mr. Seaton. Dr. Norton has made a mistake.
What?
This body isn't your wife. I can tell that by the ring. It's the ring that Judge Foster always wore.
Hello? Oh, yes, Sheriff. Any news yet? Well, why can't your men find her? It's been 6 hours already. No, I haven't heard a word. Yes, please, call me as soon as you hear anything, will you? Okay, thanks. Who's there? Who is it?
Paul, open the door!
Sarah!
Yes, yes, quick, let me in!
Oh, Sarah, Sarah, thank the Lord, you're all right.
Oh, Paul!
Darling, where have you been? What happened to you?
Wait, lock the door, quickly! She doesn't know I've come back. She's still looking for me.
Who?
Hester. She was out there, Paul. That's why I ran from the house. She called to me from the road, made me go with her.
Go where?
To the cemetery. She kept me there, torturing me, begging me to change places with her.
Darling, you're not making sense.
Please, please, please believe me. We've got to get away from here tonight, right now. She'll kill me if we don't. She wants my life for the one she never lived.
Now stop it. Stop. Get a hold of yourself, because there's no such woman as Hester Randall.
But I saw her. I talked to her.
The woman you saw is somebody else, somebody living, who wants you to believe that she's Hester, who wants everybody to believe it.
But why, Paul? Why?
because she's a cold-blooded murderess. She's killed two people already, and she's trying to drive you out of your mind completely.
But then who? Who could it be?
You saw this Hester, Sarah. What was she like?
Oh, like a ghost. Like a shadow in the light. You can see her face, and yet you can see through it. Beyond.
It's the back door again. It's blown open again.
Leave it. We've got to get out of here.
No, you stay here. I'm going to see who opened that door.
Please hurry. Don't leave me alone for long. Oh!
What is it, Sarah?
Don't come in here. Don't come back. Run away as fast as you can.
What's the matter?
Don't come in here. She's here. Hester.
Sarah.
Look out. I've got the gun out of the desk. I'm going to kill her.
Sarah. Sarah, are you all right?
I've killed her, Paul. She won't torture me anymore. I've killed Hester. She came toward me, and I fired.
Sarah, there's no one in this room, dear.
Over there, in the hall. She's there.
Where? I don't... Good Lord. You've broken the mirror.
What?
You shot it yourself.
No, it can't be. I can't be her. And yet... I saw her face.
And it was my face, too.
Sarah, it was you. You all the time.
I am Hester, fair gentleman. It is warming to have such a friend as you to stand beside me in this mockery of justice.
Oh, Sarah, Sarah.
Run. Run as fast as you can, Paul. I was wrong. I haven't killed her. Run.
Sarah, I've got to help you. I've got to explain to you that...
Thou art not, Sarah. Not anymore. Can't you see who I am? Can't you see who has taken my place?
Sarah, listen to me. I love you. Please, please come back to me.
Sarah's gone. Now I can live the years they took from me.
Sarah!
See in my hand this pistol? We will bid it, I say. It will come with me.
Still no answer, Sheriff.
No answer, Dr. Norton. I can't understand it. Mr. Seaton was home when I called just 15 minutes ago.
I warned you, Sheriff, to leave that house closely watched.
Well, I can't do 100 things at once. I've got every available deputy out looking for Mrs. Seaton.
Don't you realize she may have gone back to their house? Don't you realize that she's the one that might be Hester?
Mrs. Seaton? Hester? What the deuce are you talking about?
I'm talking about dual personality. Mrs. Seaton is suffering from a nervous breakdown, and it's entirely possible that she's the one who killed Griffin and Judge Foster.
Why, you should have told me this before, Doctor. Come on, we're getting now right over to the Seaton house.
Here, Paul. They buried Hester's body here. Dishonored and unnamed. But, Paul, you believe in my innocence.
Yes, Sarah. We'd better go back, dear.
Back?
Just to the house. It's very cold here.
It's cold everywhere, Paul. I feel the chill of death coming near me. You and I are going back. Back through time, to an age where no one can harm us. This torch I hold, it will free us forever!
Now wait. Sarah, please, listen. Now try to understand, dear.
Ease your mind. The flames will be of no pain. I know. Because I've been through such a death before.
No. Now, Sarah, wait.
Oh, Paul. Hester's going.
Oh, Sarah.
Mr. Seaton, are you all right?
Yes.
Paul, she's going from me. Forever.
Oh, Sarah.
She's dead, Mr. Seaton.
I'm sorry, Mr. Seaton.
Sheriff.
What is it? What's the matter?
Look, at the headstone. I didn't notice that before. It's been recut.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, don't you see what it says? Hester Randall, a lost soul. Born October 13th, 1759. Died September 12th, 1949. Today.
Say, have you had your personality split lately, You see what happens when a dame gets her dates mixed up? Poor Hester, she didn't know whether she was coming or going to the grave. Now, if you should be in an old New England cemetery some night and one of the headstones should move, don't be frightened. It's probably just Hester coming up for a hot date again. Oh, and by the way, there's no parting moral attached to tonight's tale. I'll just leave you with your own thoughts, as horrible as I hope they are. Well, it's time to close that creaking door for a rest. Good night. Pleasant dreams. Of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host inviting you in through the creaking door. Well, it's so nice of you to come here tonight and help me sit up with the corpse. He's such dull company, so cold and stiff, bored with being dead. All the life seems to have gone out of him. What? You say you've seen him before. Oh, no, he's not that horror man who plays in pictures. But he does look like him. So much so, in fact, you might even call him a dead ringer. No doubt the telephone is an ingenious invention, but as far as I know, no one has yet been able to commit murder over it, although many people have wanted to. Still, there are worse things you can get on the phone than the wrong number, especially if you happen to call the voice on the wire. On a long, narrow island just off the shore of one of our larger lakes, Mrs. Geraldine Reeves, widow of the late composer David Reeves, lives alone in a gaunt, gray-shingled house. Only a few hundred yards away are the charred remains of her former home, where David was burned to death in a fire just 2 years ago. It's after dinner now, and as the clock in the hall strikes 8...
You've got to get hold of yourself, Geraldine.
I can't help it, Doctor. You see, it starts every night about this time.
What starts?
The music. David's last composition. I hear it being played on a piano, and the notes seem to come from the old house. The house where David died in the fire.
Well, perhaps it's someone is playing that piece on the piano. Someone on the island.
No, there's no one. There's only one other house out here, and those people are away. And the dog. A dog keeps howling all night long.
What dog?
I don't know. There's no dog on the island, but David and I did have a dog, remember? He stayed with David the night of the fire. He died with him because David was too ill to get out of bed. There. There it is again.
That's amazing. That's a real dog, somewhere on this island.
Oh, do you think so?
Why, of course. Probably some stray got across the bridge or swam over from the shore.
Well, you see, I... Oh, excuse me, Doctor.
Certainly.
Hello?
Hello, Mrs. Geraldine Reeves?
Yes, speaking. Who is this?
Listen.
Good heavens.
You have 4 hours to live, Mrs. Reeves. 4 hours to live.
What? What did you say? Hello? Hello?
What's the matter, Geraldine?
The music. The same music. I heard it again.
What?
Over the phone. Someone's playing it on the piano.
That must be some sort of a prank.
No, no, no. A man spoke to me. He said I have 4 hours to live.
4 hours to... Here, let me have that phone.
No, no, it's no use. He's rung off.
Well, we might be able to trace the call. Hello, operator? Operator?
Somebody's trying to kill
Hello,
me.
Hello, operator? Operator?
What's wrong, doctor?
I'm afraid the wires have been cut. We'd better get into my car and drive into town right away.
Yes. Yes, it isn't safe for me to stay here another minute.
Can't understand it. The motor won't turn over. Somebody must have meddled with this car while we were in the house.
Well, try my car, Doctor.
I think perhaps I'd better. Is it in the garage?
Yes, yes. I left it right... Great heavens! It's gone! The garage is empty. The car's been stolen!
Now, let's not lose our heads, Geraldine.
But
we're not
car.
Completely cut off yet. If we can't use a car, we can still walk.
But it's almost a mile to the bridge, and the road is so dark down along the water.
It won't be too dark with a flashlight. We can go down through the woods to the edge of the water and walk along the shore.
Oh, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
I just remembered. David's brother is driving out here tonight.
Harvey?
Yes, and his wife, Laura. They said they'd be here by 8:30, and if we wait for them, they can take us in their car. What do you think, Doctor?
That's safer than trying to make it alone. If we wait right here, perhaps we can watch the bridge and see them coming. Heaven's sakes, Geraldine. What are you staring at?
The bridge, Doctor. The bridge, look. This end of it's been washed out. Oh, Doctor, this is crazy, searching for a telephone wire in the back of the house. If we're seen out here, there's no telling what might happen.
Please, please, Geraldine. We've got to find out where that wire was cut and splice it together again. It's our only chance of reaching the police.
But it's almost 9 o'clock. We've wasted an hour already. If I'm not out of here by 12...
Stop it, Geraldine. Stop it.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to... What's that?
It's the dog again. That confounded dog is tied up around here someplace.
No, no, I didn't mean that. I mean that light on the road. There's a strange light on the road.
The headlight of a car, coming this way.
A car?
Yes, quick, behind the house to stay out of sight. It's turning into the driveway.
How could a car have come across the bridge with that bridge out?
Shh! They're getting out.
And Laura.
Good heavens.
Oh, Harvey.
Hello.
Harvey. Oh, Harvey.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Jerry, what are you doing? Playing hide and seek with us back there?
Oh, Harvey, I'm so glad you've come.
Jerry, what's the matter?
Oh, everything, everything. But first you've got to tell us how you got here.
Why, we just drove over the bridge and on up the road the way we always do.
But how could you drive over the bridge? It's been washed out.
What?
Well, I saw it with my own eyes, and Dr. Prising saw it too, didn't you, Doctor?
I certainly did.
Oh, you must be mistaken. We drove over the bridge not more than 2 minutes ago.
Are you sure you haven't been on the island longer than that?
Oh, I'm positive. Why?
Well, some very strange things have been happening here tonight. Geraldine's life was threatened, her car stolen, and mine tampered with.
What?
What are you talking about?
Look, I'll show you. The starter in my car won't even turn the motor over. Here. By George, it's working now.
Say, what is this, Jerry? Have you and the doctor been taking a few pills? Or did you drink too much wine at dinner?
Oh, no, no. Everything he said is true. Even the telephone wires have been cut. I must be going out of my mind. That is my telephone ringing, isn't it?
Yes, of course. Aren't you going to answer it?
I'm almost afraid to. Come with me, Harvey, will you, while I do?
Sure.
Hello?
Hello, Mrs. Reeves?
Yes?
Listen. It's 9 o'clock, Mrs. Reeves. You have 3 hours to live.
I can't stand this waiting, this endless waiting. Why don't the police come?
Easy now, Jerry. They'll be here. You only phoned them a few minutes ago.
But something can happen before they get here.
I have a gun ready, just in case anything should happen. And I won't hesitate to use it.
You have a gun, Doctor?
Why, yes. Geraldine gave it to me before you arrived.
Oh.
What's the matter? You don't trust me with the gun, do you?
Why, of course, I...
Laura, what is it?
A face at the window. I just saw a face at the window.
Laura, please, you're letting your imagination run away with you.
No, I saw it. Right there. The face of a dead man.
Quick, Harvey, out the back way.
Right.
No, no, please don't leave us.
We'll be right outside the window.
Jerry, I'm afraid.
Well, there's nothing we can do, Laura. They won't be far away.
But I don't trust Dr. Prizing. You never should have given him that gun.
Why not?
Because I think he's a murderer.
Laura!
Yes. Don't you remember how he acted at the trial when you were accused of starting the fire that killed David?
But he
testified against you, time and again, subtly, to make them think you did it. But he started that fire himself.
What on earth are you saying?
I'm telling you the truth. During the trial, he swore that he wasn't on the island the night of the fire, but he was, and I can prove it.
How?
By this cigarette case of his. Here, look at it. You see how it's charred and melted on the side where his initials were? He must have left it in the fire that night, by mistake.
But he couldn't have. The police searched everything next morning. They would have found it in the ashes.
Not if it wasn't there. He came back for it that same night, soon as he missed it, and dragged it out of the fire. He knew it would incriminate him if it were found in his possession, so he threw it into the lake as he drove home over the bridge. And that's where we found it, in the water, the last time we were out here.
Oh, Laura, I hope you're wrong.
So do I. But if I'm right, we're all in for a busy night.
Laura?
Oh! Lights!
Somebody's turned off the lights! Laura? Laura, where are you?
Jerry, the door! Coming through the door! It's the face I saw at the...
Laura? Laura? It was meant to be me, Harvey. Whoever came through that door intended to kill me.
Jerry, please. How is Laura, Doctor?
I'm afraid I can't do anything for her, Harvey. She's passed on.
Oh, Laura. Laura, darling.
Better not touch the body, Harvey.
No, leave me alone. You've done enough already, Dr. Prizing.
I beg your pardon.
You have a lot of explaining to do when the police arrive, Doctor. I'll tell them how you ran away from me out there before the lights went out, and how you were here in this room when they went on again.
Harvey, don't say things you'll regret later on.
Just a moment. Where is the cigarette case Laura had in her hand when the lights were out?
What cigarette case?
You know the one I mean, Dr. Prizing. The gold one that was charred in the fire.
I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking about.
I have. And if you're as innocent as you claim to be, you won't mind being searched.
Not at all. Go right ahead.
I will.
Whom are you calling, Geraldine?
The police. I can't understand why they haven't arrived. It's almost 10 o'clock.
Maybe something's happened to them on the way. Maybe their car broke down.
Their car, too? Nothing. Only, it seems as if your car is the only one that works when you want it to.
Headquarters.
Oh, Sergeant! Sergeant, I can't understand why your men aren't here yet. A murder's been committed.
Do you think you've been calling the police department all this time, Mrs. Reeves?
David's music.
It's 10 o'clock, Mrs. Reeves. You have 2 more hours.
Jerry, are you in your room?
Yes, Harvey. What is it?
This is our chance, Jerry. We've got to run away from Dr. Prising now, while we're alone.
Yes, of course, Harvey, but how will we go?
In my car. It's just outside. Wait a minute. Listen.
What is it?
Sounds like footsteps in the living room. Prising must be in there.
No, I saw him go outside. He said he wanted to see if he could find the dog.
Oh, there's someone in there. I'm going to find out who it is.
Oh, be careful, Harvey. He may be standing just outside the door.
Yeah, all right. You stay behind me.
Is anybody there? No. Is anybody in the living room?
No. There doesn't seem to be anyone in here.
Don't overlook me, Harvey.
Well, Dr. Prising, you've been standing at this door with your ear to the keyhole.
No, not exactly.
I thought you were supposed to be outside, looking for that dog.
I was outside, for a while. But I saw someone moving around in here, so I came back. When I got here, your wife's body was gone.
What?
What?
Gone? Laura's body? Gone?
I assume it's gone. It's not where it was on the floor.
How could... Oh, look here, Dr. Prising. You were alone in this room.
And so were you. After I left, wasn't he, Geraldine?
Well, yes, now that I think back, he was.
Certainly. What's more, Geraldine saw me leave the house. And when I left, the body was still here. After that, I don't know what happened.
What are you driving at?
Draw your own conclusions. I've drawn mine.
Why, you
Harvey,
filthy...
Harvey, stop it! Stop it!
I'm sorry, Jerry. I just...
The dog again.
Yeah, I can't understand why you didn't find that dog, Dr. Prising. He must be right out where the old house used to be.
Well, if you think you can find him, why don't you go? Good heavens, man.
What?
Look, there's a fire burning out there.
On the grounds of the old house.
Prising, you started that fire yourself, and you're burning Laura's body in it to cover up your crime.
Harvey, where are you going?
I'm going to the fire, Jerry. I've got to stop it. I've got to put it out.
I'm going to lose my mind if something doesn't stop these awful things from happening. Why won't anybody help us?
Geraldine. The man who hoped to kill you was trying to break you down first. It's part of his plan. Here, take a sip of this brandy. It'll help you.
All right. Thank you, Doctor.
What's the matter?
Oh, nothing really. I just don't care for any brandy just now.
What's wrong with it?
Well, I didn't say anything was wrong with it. I just don't...
You fool. Do you think I'm trying to poison you?
I don't know what to think.
Here, give me that brandy. I'll drink it myself. There. Believe me now?
I don't believe anyone.
Listen to me, Geraldine. I'm the best friend you have in the world right now. You've got to understand that, because there isn't much more time. We've got to get away from Harvey while he's still out there.
What do you mean?
Can't you see? He's trying to kill you.
That's a lie.
It isn't, Geraldine. Harvey's the one that's lied to us. He and Laura both. They intended to kill you when the lights went out. But in the darkness, Harvey made a fatal mistake. He thought it was you he was strangling, not Laura.
I won't believe that.
It's the truth. They never drove across that bridge at 9 o'clock tonight. They've been here on the island all evening.
How do you know?
Because we saw that bridge with our own eyes, and I saw it again just 5 minutes ago. It's still down.
You're lying.
Come out and see it for yourself.
You're just trying to get me out of this house.
Stop being such a fool. Here, take this gun. If it'll give you any security, take it and hold it in my back while we're out there. But for heaven's sakes, let's get away from Harvey while there's still a chance.
All right. Give me the gun.
Here.
Now. You keep in front of me all the time, and I'm warning you. If you make one false move, I'll kill you in cold blood.
You see? Harvey and Laura were lying to us. The bridge is still down.
You're right. They couldn't have come across that bridge.
Of course not. The only trouble is, we can't get back over it now either.
We've got to get away, Doctor, now before we're seen.
What about that house at the other end of the island?
The people are away.
But they may have a boat.
Yes, of course, they do have a boat. We can row to the mainland. Come on, quick.
All right.
I have a feeling we're being followed.
It's your imagination. Hurry, Geraldine, hurry.
We are being followed, Doctor. Look behind us. There's a man with a dog.
Good heavens. It's just like the dog you own, the one that died in the fire.
Yes, and that man, it's David. Woo!
We've lost them.
Oh, they can't.
Lost them in the woods.
They can't be far behind.
That doesn't matter now. The house is just ahead.
But the boat, Doctor, the boat's not at the landing.
It must be.
Well, it isn't. Can't you see that it isn't?
Perhaps it's around in back.
No, that side of the house faces the road.
Then we'll have to break in. Hide here until morning. Our best chance is to be inside where we can protect ourselves. After all, you still have a gun.
But I hardly know how to use it.
Then give it to me.
No!
You still don't trust me, do you? Well,
I don't know, Doctor, but I'm the one who's been threatened, so I really should have the gun.
Very well, wait here. I'll break through the window and come around the inside.
Did you hurt yourself?
No, I'm all right. Just wait there for me and I'll unlock the door.
Oh, hurry, Doctor, please hurry. They're on our trail again.
Come inside, Geraldine, quickly, and lock the door behind you.
What's wrong, Doctor?
Nothing's wrong. We're in luck. There's a phone here, if it hasn't been disconnected. Hello? Hello, operator.
This isn't the operator. Tell Mrs. Reeves it's 11 o'clock. She has one more hour to live.
Half past 11.
I won't leave this house. I'm not going to run away any longer. If they're going to kill me, let them come here and do it. Only for heaven's sake, why don't they do it right away? Why don't they come here and get it over with instead of waiting until 12 o'clock?
Geraldine, please.
Well, I can't stand it any longer. I'd rather die than go through any more of this torture. I just can't.
Sit down for a moment. Relax. Try to ease your mind.
Oh, what are you doing?
Playing the piano. I thought it might relax you.
But that melody. You. You're the one I hear at night playing David's music, playing it right here in this house.
Yes, Geraldine. I rented this house to protect you from David and the dog.
Well, stop it! Stop playing that piece! Stop it!
You didn't know that David would come back to life, did you, Geraldine?
No, you stay where you are. Stay!
Don't be afraid. I won't harm you, as long as you have that gun. But the gun won't stop David.
David's dead.
Is he? Listen. It's right outside the door. And in a moment, he'll be here to take you with him.
No! David! David?
Yes, Geraldine. I've come back to see you, in spite of everything you've done.
Stop!
You killed me, didn't you, darling? You started that fire because you knew I was too much of an invalid to get out of bed.
Stay where you are!
You hated me, Geraldine.
Stop!
No. Your bullets can't harm me now. Nothing you can do can harm me, because I'm dead and you're still alive.
David! David, forgive me. I didn't know what I was doing that night. Please, please believe me. I was sorry as soon as I started that fire, but it was too late then. I couldn't put it out. I just couldn't.
How dare you? How dare you ask my forgiveness when you're still lying?
But I'm not lying. I'm not. I told you everything.
Why didn't you tell the police?
Because I wanted to live.
You'll confess everything now?
Oh, yes, David. Yes, I will. If you'll only leave me alone, please. Please, it was my cigarette case Laura found in the water. I'd thrown it over the bridge that same night after I took it out of the fire.
I guess that's all we need, Harvey. A full confession and two witnesses.
Harvey?
Yes, Geraldine. I do look like my brother in this dim light. And the dog Laura's holding outside is the same breed as the one you owned.
Laura? Laura? Did you say Laura was alive?
Very much so, Geraldine. Wasn't hard for me to pretend being dead, with the doctor keeping you away from my body.
Then you were all in this together. You forced this confession out of me.
Yes, Geraldine. The blank cartridges Dr. Pricing slipped into that gun of yours really turned the trick. Excuse me. Hello? Oh, hello, Inspector. Yes, it's all right now. You can hook the wires up again. She's told us the truth. And you'd better get to work on that bridge right away. It's still down.
What an outrage. all those opportunities for murder and not a drop of blood spilled all night long. Oh, well, some days you can't lay away a corpuscle. Well, it's time for me to join the moonbeams now. But before I leave under a cloud, before I'm missed, I thought I might pass on the moral of tonight's story. If you must light a fire under your husband's bed, be careful where you drop the ashes. Well, now it's really time to close that there creaking door until next time. So, until then, good night. Pleasant dreams. You've been listening to Inner Sanctum. The Dead Laugh was first heard on CBS Radio September 23, 1946. The Vengeful Corpse was first heard September 12, 1949. And The Voice on the Wire was first heard November 29, 1944. This has been a production of the On the Air Radio Player. Tonight's show was directed by Ann Davis. Our production manager and Foley artist was Jason Morris. Our music director was Gray Newborn. Our sound engineer was Christine Corrieri. The scripts were edited by Bob Dutton. The voices and sound effects artists in tonight's show were Melanie Armstrong, Joshua Chin, Valerie Chin, Jana Francis Fisher, Shane Harris, William Kaffenberger, Scott Newborn, Morgan Riley, Woody Robertson Jr., and John Witt. On the Air Radio Players is sponsored by the County of Henrico, Division of Recreation and Parks. For more information about upcoming shows and recordings of past performances, visit our website, www.otarp.com. For the On the Air Radio Players, this is John Witt saying thank you and good night.